This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Dr. Sterling Bone from Utah State University. If you caught part one, then we're going to keep rolling in this conversation about authenticity and trust building and go into the sales process. Dr. Sterling, are you ready to talk about persuasion and persuasive sales processes?
Can't wait. Looking forward to it.
All right, let's get into this because I know that there's a lot that I want to cover based on where first part went. I didn't want to stop that. For anyone tuning in, please make sure to check part one. Also, I'll have the link to Dr. Sterling's information, his bio. He runs the Huntsman Pro Sales Program, also the Huntsman School of Business, the John M. Huntsman School of Business at Utah State University. We've actually done some work together to help the students and in any small way that I can. And we had a great conversation about authenticity. The final part that we talked about, which was fascinating as an unplanned, unscripted segue, I couldn't have written it better, which is authenticity leading into trust, trust building authenticity. Here we are with the persuasion topic, which is, to me, the intentional sales process that you want to put in place to help move the right people forward in what you're talking about, with sales being something you're doing for somebody, not to them. And so how do we persuade people who are stuck? And so what have you found now? And we don't have to go way back to the selling to process of back in the day, but what is it that you found works as a sales process to build, to convey that authenticity, build that trust on the path to getting someone to make a buying decision?
You know, there's lots of, I think thoughts, there's a lot of angles to that, Jason. So I'm going to try to maybe keep my brain focused a little bit, but I, you know, one of the things that I find most important is transparency and an articulation at the, at every opportunity with the buyer to be able to state what your intentions and purposes for meeting or talking or reaching out for, right? I think we need to, you know, disarm our buyer by letting them know that we are not here to push and to trick and to sell in a less or non-authentic way. And so one of the things right out of the gate that I think is absolutely important is to state what your purpose and what is your desired end goal for that meeting, and to articulate that in your meeting set or agenda set right at the top, to say, you know, typically at the end of this meeting, my goal would be to continue into a follow-up meeting or to move into the contracting phase or to move into the demo phase, whatever stage we're at in the sales process, but let them know right at the top. And if you're not feeling, you know, comfortable with that end goal, let's talk about it, right? Let's have an open conversation about that. And I think by doing that early on, it really disarms the buyer. It puts them at ease and enables trust to really flow in that conversation. And so I think really at the top, just, you know, not holding any cards, right? Just revealing what your intents and purposes are, I think is very strategic and very human. And I think we need to do that more commonly in our sales practices.
Let me ask you a devil's advocate type of question. Okay. Because manipulative, kind of self-centered salespeople or sales processes do the same thing as well. I won't name any names to ones I'm thinking about, but I'm thinking about some where they also do that upfront contract. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what, if this goes like this, then here's what we're going to do as the next step. How do you take what some people might have even experienced as, oh my gosh, this is salesy moment, into I don't want it to come across as that, and I want to differentiate myself from the salesy salespeople who are also using upfront contracts? Because you're right, I agree with you, but then we've all experienced both sides of that.
And I know what you're referring to, and we won't go there, because I certainly see that that can be one of those commonly now recognized from buyers, like, oh, there's an upfront contract coming right here. Right. They come right. And so I think this is where you need to have a very open, you know, what are you hoping to get out of this meeting, right? What would you like to talk about, right? I'm here truly to help you. What are your goals for this meeting? And not to give them, you know, a set of, you know, priors of this is where we're going to go, but to really, you know, ask their intentions. I train my students that if you're, you know, in that early stage of the sales process and you're having a meeting with customers, you know, just asking you, why are you taking this call? I mean, I'm a salesperson. Mm-hmm. You have to know that, right? I'm a salesperson, right? Why would you want to talk with me? What are you hoping to get out of this? And just even just kind of have a little humor to recognize that, hey, we're talking, you're talking to a seller. Why are you giving me time? What are you hoping to get out of this meeting? And that enables more of, hey, we're going to take titles off the table and it's going to be now about human to human. Let's have a conversation.
Why do you think that works so well? That whole, like, what were you hoping to get out of this meeting? Why did you fill out the form? Why did you call our company? So on.
I think, you know, first of all, it shows that you're willing to quote unquote sell not on a script, and that you're willing to get down to a natural conversation, and that you're not coming in with a set of, you know, tactics and tricks to be able to take them through. So I think it shows that you're more comfortable in your ability to have a conversation. And I think, it really says, hey, I'm here to listen. I'm really here as your advocate. I'm here as your advisor. I'm here to really have you guide this journey. Yeah. Right. I often will pull up my car keys, right? I'll pull up my car keys and say, okay, it's time for you to drive. Right. And I'll throw, I don't have car keys. We have these key fobs now, but here, you drive. Right. Right. I tell my students, I said, that's what I want you to do. I want you to throw the keys to your buyer and say, I want to take the passenger seat. I want you to drive. Where do you want to go? Let me kind of help you. And, you know, let me help fuel this vehicle. Let me help, give you what you need to make this successful journey, but I want you to drive this conversation. I don't want to be the person that is, you know, per se, the only driving. I know that goes counter of taking control and some other methodologies where they say you need to be in that control seat. I really think the power is when you get the buyer taking control of their buying process, and that you are there to say, hey, I'm here to help you.
So many things in that. And this is about your stuff, but anyone who knows me knows that I have so many thoughts on that are in alignment with that. The whole control thing, I think it's important to maintain control of the overall direction you're going, but you don't have to control every part. This is where I agree with you, but your role is different, right? Is not to be the controlling salesperson and the expert, it's to be the guide. And so you're just guiding them where they're going, but they're the ones that are on the mission that you're a part of. And I absolutely love that. And I think one of the biggest things with what you're talking about is with that whole, I'm hoping, you know, what are you hoping to get out of this meeting when you're talking about that is you, like you said, you're listening. And I think the important part is so many people in sales get so, really, it's brainwashed. They get brainwashed by the company, the brochure, the product, the sales deck, the training to say, we're amazing. Everyone wants us. Of course they want us. That they forget that maybe not everybody wants it for the same reason you've been brainwashed into thinking everyone wants it. And maybe you should actually care what people want. And then see if there's an intersection. Instead of assuming, of course you want to talk to me because of course my fill in the blank product is amazing, right?
Yeah, and I'll admit that I've trained where we ask that question and that sometimes as a seller you're like, I don't like what they say, I'm going to kind of ignore what they said and I'm going to still focus on what I intend to focus on. I think the real brilliant sellers are those that say, okay, let's start with what you want to talk about first. Let's start there, right? And that they're confident that, hey, that's a priority. I've essentially asked you your priorities. I'm now saying it's not my priorities, it's your priorities. Let's focus there. I have to tell you that the story that I tell my students that we've all been on one of those tours, or I took my father, he would probably say he took me, I can't remember who funded what, but we went on a father-son fishing trip to Alaska, and we had this guide that was amazing on the first day. That guide was really good on the first day because he showed us everything. He did everything for us. He took control. But I started envisioning and believing that I could actually take control. But on day two, he wanted to bait my hook. He wanted to hook the fish. He wanted to land the fish and reel it in. And he wanted to make sure we didn't lose the fish. And I think his intentions were fine, right? I don't think it was that he was trying to be one of these control freaks, if you will. But the quality of my experience declined as I had less and less control in that experience. And And I had envisioned what it was going to be to catch fish on my own in Alaska. I wanted the guide, but I didn't want the guide to necessarily be in every picture. I didn't want the guide to be, you know, the person that was getting all the credit or the one that was taking all the credit. I wanted the guide to be there as kind of my backdrop, or my kind of in the back, you know, out of the picture, if you will. But yeah, I could turn to if I needed them. I think in selling, as a seller, we want to be in the picture, right? We want to be, you know, okay, everybody, let's take a picture. I'm the seller, you're the buyer. And the seller, you need to disappear. You need to get out and let that buyer take more of the spotlight. And so I think as we think about, you know, process, you know, what is your questioning, your demoing, what is your introductions, what are your closing, when, advanced techniques, is the buyer front and center, or are you taking a front and center stage? And I think more we need to take a backstage approach in how we sell and let the star be the buyer and let them come forward.
It's so true. And there's so many reasons for it that I won't go into it, but they must be the hero of the story, because here's the punchline. They're self-centered humans, because we are all self-centered humans. So they only care about themselves. And so if you try to be the hero, there's a battle of wills and it doesn't work out. And I think what's interesting is what you're talking about with sales and then correlating it to your Alaska fishing trip and the guide thing. The problem is that guide is trying to be the hero, and the guide is only focused, that guide and that fishing trip is only focused on the end result. The end result is making sure that you catch fish and have fish when you go home. Most likely they had a bad experience where someone didn't get fish and complained. They had fun, but they didn't get the results. And so then that person shifted to, I must do everything I have to do to make sure someone gets fish and takes home fish. That's the only way to produce a happy customer as somebody who went on my guide. And salespeople do that same thing. The problem is, and this is what nobody's focusing on enough, is what was the experience? What was your experience as a customer? Was it a great experience with less fish? Or was it a terrible experience with more fish? Because you could have just bought fish, right? And in sales, is it a terrible experience, but you still bought the CRM? Or is it a great experience, and then maybe you didn't, or you bought the right product, but you didn't get upsold, but now you're a super happy customer?
Yep, absolutely. Right. I think we all want to catch that one fish on our own to be a part of that. That's more important than just having a guy do it all for you. So I think you absolutely articulated better than I could, Jason.
Oh, no, it's great. And, I think we're both familiar with Dr. Howard Dover's book. But a lot of this is, you know, it's all about that experience, because we're all you in our normal lives buying whatever we want on our own. And so I don't need somebody to tell me how something works. I just want some guidance or some help, right? And so salespeople are just off on that at times. And so how do you help that? Like, so you're teaching in the classroom. You're helping future professional salespeople go out there in the world and work for a wide range of companies selling a wide range of products or services in a wide range of ways that a company might mandate. And so how do you teach sales process fundamentals, or what do you teach them as those stages beyond the authenticity and trust kind of intertwined piece of like, okay, but what else matters in a sales process?
Yeah, you know, we find it very important to build the skeletal structure, if you will, of a process. We really preach in our program having fundamentals around process and plays and metrics, and coaching is kind of the tenets of what we train. But I find a lot of freedom and a lot of students being able to shine in their natural selves if they have a process that gives them the flexibility. And when I say process, I'm not talking script, right? I'm not talking steps. I'm talking that here is the buying and selling journey interwoven. Right. So whether this is a, you know, kind of an open or an approach, first step to a discovery, what I refer to as needs audit, approach to a demo solution presentation, but understanding the process and understanding how we are able to communicate and signal and come together with a buyer that we are now advancing to the next stage. And beauty is when the buyer recognizes that their buying steps are being accomplished and they're able to move forward in that process. And so I'm a big systems guy, in the sense that I really believe that we're products of systems, and that great outcomes are the product of of systems, and that if we want to have predictable, substantial, sustainable, you know, reliable type results, then I need to look at my system. And it's not a people problem. And I really preach that, you know, there might be a superstar in my classroom, but it certainly isn't me. I'm average, and average performers can rise to excellence and to top performers through system adherence and through following good process. And so really following into those processes. And that, for me, that was kind of my experience growing up in sales, was I wasn't naturally great. I was pretty average at best. My mom always said I was special, but special kind of has a negative connotation. Right. And I knew that I was different. And so I was capable of doing, you know, maybe remarkable things, but it really is the systems that you employ. And so, you know, fundamental to sales is, what are your systems? What are your processes? Right. I always say, if you can't draw it out, if you can't describe it and present it to me on a napkin, you probably don't have a system or a process that is really going to probably serve you value. I mean, these systems and processes don't have to be overly complex and taxing. They don't have to be, you know, multiple flow charts. I mean, it could be simply something that you can articulate on a cocktail, you know, napkin that says, this is where I go in my day-to-day process or system. And I'm talking about cells, but just humans, right? We all know that. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in some of the work that James Clear has written about atomic habits, that if I can get this 1% better, if I can get 1% better in my process, in my system, and I can do that every day, you know, exponentially over a year's time, what is going to be that result? It's going to be remarkable, right? And that's the reason why I was attracted to you, to your work, Jason, and then inviting you to come to speak to my students. I mean, how does someone that goes from a marine biologist someone make the remarkable shift to be a sales thought leader, right? It's someone that is, you know, develops and adheres to system and process. And, you know, even just learning about the authentic persuasion process and helping my students be able to embrace that process. And one of the great activities, you know, Jason, that I find my students really open their eyes is to think, now, can I develop a process that's unique to me that will serve me well in my selling role? And it's really, truly authentic. And they find it liberating that that's one of the activities they do to be able to demonstrate that they are authentic persuasion sellers. And so anyways, I've probably riffed a little bit too far away from the original question, but yeah, I think it's really adherence to process, and really, you know, that's where we start, is what are your systems? What are your process? These are not scripts. These are, you have the flexibility to bring your personality, your social style, your unique and different capabilities, and your just who you are, your personality. Mm-hmm. That's embraced when you take a systems and process approach. You don't have to be, you know, formulaic, scripted. That's not going to serve anybody well.
Yeah, and I love that, because it's so true. At the base fundamental level, is just understanding where you are now, where you want to go in this sales conversation or whole sales cycle. And then what are the milestones? What are the pieces that you have to go through, and the stages and or, you know, your mini goals throughout that, so that you can accomplish it? And I think that's great. And I think that is helpful. So when you do that exercise with the students, or you talk to the students about this, how much does it come up, or how much do they resist that system and process? How much do they think is art, not science, where they thought, okay, I just show up and I talk to people and I convince people to buy things, because that's what they're used to or experiencing in their normal life prior to your class, right? And where is that balance of art and science within sales that you can teach at this level?
You know, there is embracing, and there is some pushback, because, you know, individuals that have sold in other methodologies or approaches are like, no, you just show up at the doorstep and you say these words and you get the sell. And then, you know, we say your life sucks, right? That you don't want to do that, right? But no, I think that students embrace it pretty quickly. And I think they embrace it really quickly when they recognize that selling process and selling systems are no different than the systems that they employed to be top performers in other areas of their life, right? I teach some student athletes, and teaching student athletes is a dream. It's absolutely a dream, because these are individuals that are high achievers, that, you know, they've achieved the ability to play college athletics, but they recognize very quickly, if you're going to be a college athlete, you better have amazing systems and processes. I love teaching students that are from the arts, right? I have one of my recent presidents of our ProCells program was a vocalist, a vocal performance major, and a piano performance major. And I love those students that are from the arts, because they understand how mastery comes. Mastery comes with, you know, just in incredible amounts of time practicing when no one other than themselves is really listening, right? They understand the importance of role play and practice and just getting comfortable in their art. I love to teach engineer cells, because engineers, they just embrace system. I mean, they just love system. They think that they own the systems, right? Engineers, they're the grand creators of systems. So when I talk about systems, engineers get it. They get the systems that are about building integrity. And that's not just honesty, but building integrity in structural soundness, in building a relationship that is complete and whole and structurally sound, and that can withstand any type of force or pressure, and that there is flexibility in that system and in that, and there's give, and that system can handle the threats of pressure and threats of natural occurrences. And so engineers get it. So the reality is when I meet the students halfway, if I meet them where they're at, if I come to their place, and a lot of my students, like I said, are not just business students. I teach students from a variety of different, I haven't taught a marine biologist, because we are in the mountains and we don't have a lot of biology, but I have taught biologists and hard science minded individuals. And they get it. They get it that cells is a science. They can see the science underlying persuasion. But then I teach my artists, and they likewise see it. But where they come together is through the mastery and understanding of, now, do I understand my system? Do I really have a process? And do I really follow and do I have a practice regimen that enables me to become a top performer? So I meet them at where they're at, and that's helped me be able to communicate cells to different audiences like engineers and artists.
I love it. And what's interesting, in the time that I've read about sales, studied sales, done sales, trained it, even our interactions together, I never thought about it that way. The flexibility in the system like really resonates with me. And thinking about it from a science, from an engineer, artist, athlete, where you just know systems and processes work, and are sometimes more comfortable with systems and processes than people. Then what happens is, like, you see sales different. Instead of like, I just show up and talk to people, instead I follow a system and I will get results. Now, how do I apply that to sales? Yeah. And I will tell you, like, I never thought about that way. And that's amazing. That's so valuable. And that's a great place for us to stop here on persuasion. We'll pick up the next part of the conversation about the future of sales. Once again, Dr. Sterling, thank you for being here on this journey and this conversation and sharing about what you're doing.
Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Jason.
And I'm super excited. Please, if you're watching this or tuning in, make sure to come back, check out part three. We're going to talk about the future of sales. I know that's going to be just an extension of all the stuff we've talked about. And thank you for being here on this journey. And as always, until next time, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.